A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven,
in time
concentrate on
space.
Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch.
The lights are probably gone.
So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 361. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are talking about Good Omens. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, this is a BBC and Amazon co-production from 2019. It was broadcast as 6 one-hour episodes, and it is, of course, an adaptation of a very well-loved novel by none other than Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett.
Yes, indeed. We are slowly working our way through some of the adaptations of Terry Pratchett's novels. There are a number out there. We've been starting to get to those. And this one, or this co-written novel by Pratchett and Gaiman, is a humorous look at the final battle between good and evil for the future of planet Earth.
It is indeed. It's a splendid one to kick off 2021 for us, and it has an enormous star-studded cast that will include no less than a Doctor, a Master, a Hamlet, Ron Swanson, Don Draper, the entire League of Gentlemen, a member of Spinal Tap, Blackadder's Queenie, and an Oscar-winning actress. So this is quite an impressive cast we're going to be talking about.
And many more. It is quite, as you say, quite a staggering cast. It's quite something. So the setup, Good Omens, tells the story of an angel and a demon who have followed the fate of humanity since the Garden of Eden, but the final end days, the final battle between good and evil is on its way, and it is eagerly awaited by most of heaven and by most of hell as well.
And of course, there's a set of events that are going to bring about this final battle. And it begins with the son of Satan being delivered to Earth, supposedly to replace the son of the American ambassador to Britain. But as, of course, can sometimes happen in these type of plots, it doesn't go quite according to plan. There is a mix-up of the babies at the hospital where the child is to be born. And this means that the Antichrist is not brought up by the American ambassador. Instead, he is brought up by a very ordinary family in a quiet and very ordinary English village instead. Meanwhile, there is the angel and demon that you've already mentioned, Brian. They're trying to influence the upbringing of the ambassador's son. But of course, they've got it wrong.
Yes, they are working to influence the wrong child. Meanwhile, a boy called Adam is happily playing in the woods with his best friends and his dog called Dog. And he is, of course, the actual Antichrist. So we have this set of convoluted things going on.
The stage is set.
Indeed. So looking at the characters, Crowley is a demon, originally called Crawley, as he was the snake that tempted Adam and Eve. Played as a snake-eyed lounge lizard sort of character, all in black, played by none other than David Tennant.
Yes, the first tick on our roster of impressive cast members. Second up, we've got the angel, Aziraphale, somewhat delighted by his posting on Earth, runs a second-hand bookshop, dines at the finest restaurants, and all played with a rather lovely bumbling charm by Michael Sheen. That's the Hamlet I mentioned. So that's our sort of two protagonists or antagonists in a way.
And in fact, both of them are Hamlets. Although we remember David Tennant best as the 10th Doctor on Doctor Who, he also played Hamlet on stage and on a film production.
Of course he did, yes.
Adam Young is the reluctant child who is the Antichrist, the son of Satan, accidentally placed with the Young family and not close to the U.S. presidency, as was intended. And he is played by Sam Taylor Buck.
And then we've mentioned the representation of an angel and demon on Earth. We've also got the respective forces in heaven and hell. So in heaven, we have the Archangel Gabriel, leader of the forces of heaven, eager for the final battle to come, and played by no less than John Hamm, who is, of course, Don Draper from Mad Men, immaculately dressed out in his grey suits and grey tops, and eager for the final end of days battle and conflict.
Yes, and interesting that they took an American actor and an American accent for one of the angels from heaven. That is not what you might expect, so that was kind of neat. And in opposition to him, you have Beelzebub, the leader of Hell's army, who is surrounded by flies and desperate for the final conflict, played by Anna Maxwell Martin, who I certainly remember from the Bletchley Circle.
Yes, she's a very talented actress as well. And I should say, we probably have to stop there because the list of characters and the list of actors is huge, as we've mentioned. I will quickly rattle off the Oscar-winning Frances McDormand as the voice of God. Benedict Cumberbatch is the voice of Satan. Brian Cox is the voice of Death, which I think makes this the second Pratchett production, possibly, that he's done the voice of Death in. Derek Jacobi is God's spokesman, Metatron. Plus, of course, there's Miranda Richardson, Michael McKean, Jack Whitehall, and so many other great cast members popping up to do moments in this production.
Yes, and you've mentioned at least one more Hamlet, so I'm sure we have three or four of them in here at least.
They've probably all done a Hamlet at some point.
Well, Derek Jacobi certainly has, and I believe that's on film somewhere too. Some of the others, I believe, have as well.
So let's get on with the story a bit. The show will tell us quite a bit about the backstory of Crowley and Aziraphale over the supposed 6,000-year time span of humanity's existence. I mentioned that 6,000 years because that's specified in Good Omens right at the very start. And they both appear, I think, Brian, to be the representatives of their respective sides posted to Earth. They only pop into heaven and hell to make sort of official visits. Otherwise, they spend all their time on Earth following humanity.
Yes, that's right. And it does appear that the idea is that they're sort of representatives on Earth, but they become closer and closer to earthly life and more about enjoying Earth rather than about their roots in heaven and in hell. And of course, they become much closer to each other and become very good friends and sort of the central relationship of Good Omens.
They are indeed. They are quite the friendship, and they do seem to have become somewhat, they've gone native a little bit on Earth.
Yes, absolutely. And by the time the Antichrist is due to appear, they are quite settled in their ways, and they are quite into the lives they've built for themselves on Earth. Crowley with his classic Bentley car, which seems to be able to do just about anything. And also, he has potted plants in his apartment that he speaks to and intimidates them and gets them terrified of him and so on.
And of course, Aziraphale is also with his bookshop, his old books, his distinctive white or off-white clothing, his taste for the finer things in life, particularly crepes, sushi. He loves being tempted to lunch at the Ritz. So they are quite enjoying their time, it seems, on Earth, or, you know, they have their particular ways. But as we said, in a typical English woods near a small village, a boy and a gang of friends are building dens, playing games, and quite unaware of their role, particularly Adam's role, in the coming final battle between good and evil.
Yes, absolutely. So we have several different things going on at once here. So we should get into our production notes. There's quite a bit to say about this one.
There is quite a lot. Good Omens is, of course, based on a novel, the 1990 novel of the same name, written by Terry Pratchett and, as we've said, Neil Gaiman.
Pratchett, at that point, was already getting to be well-known for his first 8 Discworld novels. Gaiman was still relatively unknown, having done a few comics, and he had started work on the epic Sandman series by then. He started on that in 89. The pair had been friends since about 1985 and decided to work together on a novel that they jokingly referred to as William the Antichrist.
And you can probably spot from that title that they intended this as an affectionate parody of the very well-loved books over this side of the pond, Brian, written by Richmal Crompton, the Just William books about the misadventures of the English schoolboy William Brown and his gang of outlaws. And you can see that influence in the scenes in the woods, I think, that we see in Good Omens.
I guess it shouldn't be a big surprise that they didn't stick with that title.
No.
They dropped that title, and ideas about the final battle and about this angel and demon friendship came to them. And they started developing things in that direction and borrowed a little of the plot from the movie The Omen, with the idea of the swapped child of an American politician.
Yes, that's the one that stands out a bit, isn't it? The Gregory Peck, Lee Remick movie, where there is a substitution at the time of birth. And is the child in that one called Damien ends up as the son of the American ambassador?
And I believe that was another production that had a doctor in it. I believe Patrick Troughton was in The Omen.
Patrick Troughton plays the priest in that one. Yes, famously, yes. So The Good Omens, the book, was written over long phone calls between the two writers, and then they were sending each other what they'd written on floppy disks in the post. So that was digital communication in the late 1980s. We've talked a little bit about digital communication when we did Lavender Castle, where they were carrying the discs around the building, but here going through the post this time, Brian.
Yes. And that was something that was certainly done a lot at that time. But for people who don't remember the 80s and early 90s, those long phone calls might have been quite expensive.
They would have been expensive as well, yes. Neil Gaiman has since estimated that the book was about 60% Terry Pratchett and 40% himself, with Pratchett being in charge of the master copy of the book. He said that at the time it was slightly easier for Terry Pratchett to take a break in writing the Discworld novels than it was for Neil Gaiman, who had just secured his sort of monthly Sandman comic and had the pressures of keeping up with deadlines for that. So you can see why Terry Pratchett became in charge of the master copy and perhaps did slightly more of the writing.
Yes, but I think it is sort of pretty clear that there is a lot of both authors in this.
Indeed.
The book became a big critical and commercial success, and of course there was talk about adaptations. For some time, Terry Gilliam was looking to develop it as a film. Rumors that Johnny Depp might play Crowley with Robin Williams as Aziraphale, which would have been an interesting production for sure. Both were actors who were frequently attached to Gilliam Project at the time. That, of course, did not happen. Gaiman gave an interview to Empire Film Magazine in 2013 saying that the funding had almost been arranged for a deal for that and fell apart in 2002.
And it is interesting how these film and television production stories sometimes happen, that a project is being talked about for many years but never quite comes to fruition. I remember Terry Gilliam was also working on a film version of Watchmen, the Alan Moore comic, but of course, when that was finally made into a film, it wasn't Terry Gilliam. But anyway, in 2011, Terry Pratchett's daughter, Rihanna, formed a new production company called Narrativa. And one of the express intentions of this company, first of all, was to get a television adaptation of Good Omens made. And another interesting name comes in, another interesting Terry. Terry Jones, the late Python, was announced as being the series writer for some time. But again, pre-production, that ran into difficulties and was delayed. And then I think, as we know, Terry Jones developed his own sad form of dementia, which probably meant that he couldn't continue with the project.
Yes, that was probably the case.
And of course, Terry Pratchett himself sadly died of dementia in 2015. And we know from Neil Gaiman that apparently one of Sir Terry's final wishes was for Neil Gaiman to write the screen version of Good Omens for television. And eventually it came to fruition.
It did. In 2016, Gaiman confirmed that he was working on the scripts and that Amazon and the BBC would be co-producing with Narrativa. Casting was announced in 2017, and filming took place between September of 2017 and March of 2018 at locations around England and also in South Africa. It was directed by Douglas McKinnon, who we remember from directing the first three episodes of Jekyll, Stephen Moffat's Jekyll, and also several episodes of New Doctor Who.
Indeed, and although it looks like it had a very big budget, which we'll talk about perhaps more in the next episode, it certainly had a few budgetary problems, which Neil Gaiman has talked about. Interestingly enough, I was listening to David Tennant's podcast with Neil Gaiman, where they talked about this production and how sometimes the budget meant that they had to be more creative and imaginative with rewrites and inserts. In particular, he mentioned a sequence that was filmed in the recreation of William Shakespeare's Globe Theatre. And I believe the way it was written, this theatre was going to be packed with 500 extras who they couldn't afford. So instead, they turned it into a rehearsal scene, and they had to punch up the jokes for Reese Shearsmith playing Shakespeare and David Tennant and Michael Sheen as Crowley and Aziraphale. And you can see how that has worked in the actual final version, because we see Aziraphale and Crowley through time, and one of their sequences is with William Shakespeare.
Yes, even in a big budget production, there are typically budget limitations that you run up against, and having 500 extras in period dress was something that they wouldn't be able to do. And I suspect there might have been some time limitations contributing to that as well.
Absolutely. And of course, they were limited with Crowley's classic 1933 Bentley, which he drives at some incredible speeds through the streets of London. But of course, as the car they were using was valued at no less than £250,000, quite a lot of it is really rather good CGI, and the visual effects that we see within the main body of the series were done by a company called Milk VFX, who did the car and certain other, visual effects within the show. And I have to say, probably because it's so up to date, this series, it all looks very good.
It does look good. And yeah, I do sort of wonder, in some of those sequences, was David Tennant or a stunt driver driving something else that they then used the CGI to make look like the Bentley, or was David Tennant sitting in a half set of something, or what have you? Interesting stuff. The effect they wanted, I think they definitely achieved. The animated title sequences were created by the Peter Anderson Studios in London, and they had music by David Arnold. The show also featured a lot of Queen songs in it. They were able to secure the rights to those. And those had been referenced in the original novel as well.
And David Arnold has composed for Bond films as well, I think, hasn't he, Brian?
Yes, absolutely. Big film composer. So this is their big budget shows up and getting big names to do, significant work on the series, like David Arnold. That's a big deal.
Mm.
All six episodes were released on Amazon Prime in May 2019 and then broadcast weekly on BBC Two starting in January of 2020.
Which, of course, brings us to the availability of this show. In Region 2, it is available to buy on DVD for £6 or Blu-ray for £12. And they both feature lots of extra features, which I haven't seen because I watched it on Amazon Prime when it came out, and it's still included with Amazon Prime. It was, of course, on BBC iPlayer for a while, but it is no longer available there. But if you've got an Amazon Prime subscription on this side of the pond, you'll be able to watch it, the episodes streaming there.
In Region 1, it is available on DVD and Blu-ray. $17 or $21 on Amazon.com in the US. And oddly enough, cheaper than that, $10 or $14 on Amazon.ca in Canada. And it is also available on Amazon Prime. And as an Amazon co-production, I think pretty much wherever Amazon Prime is available with their streaming service, you will be able to see Good Omens as part of Amazon Prime.
And I think we've both watched it on streaming rather than actual physical copies this time, Brian.
Yes, that's right.
And of course, the book Good Omens is still widely available and makes a change because this time I actually have read it. I read it back when it came out and I reread it this time. And I have to say, Brian, it is a very faithful adaptation we're dealing with, although there's always more in the book than makes it to the screen. Interestingly, my first recollection of the book was the story about Adam and his friends being sort of the main feature. But actually, when I read it again this time, possibly because of the series, it was the characters of Aziraphale and Crowley who seemed to dominate.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. It helps a lot that one of the original authors, Neil Gaiman, was doing the adaptation. It means you have someone who really understands it bringing it to screen.
It does indeed. So that will just about wrap us up for the first part of our discussion.
Yes, indeed. Next time, we will explore some more of the plot. And as we often do in the second half, we will get into some spoilers about it.
We'll also mention some other versions of Good Omens, which have been done for radio and for stage, as well as a few spin-offs from this TV show.
Absolutely.
And of course, we'll also give our own reviews and recommendations about the series and whether you should be watching it on streaming or getting a physical copy. So lots to talk about when we come back.
Yes, we definitely will have plenty to talk about in part two. Until then, you can find all of our episodes on BritishInvaders.com, or if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find our Facebook group where we will be having some Terry Pratchett and Neil Gaiman related discussion, I imagine, and always some good conversations happening there, in addition to some advanced news about what we will be covering in our schedule for the next few months.
British Invaders, we are members of the Voice of Geeks Network, which you can find at vognetwork.com. You'll find some other shows there and some interesting geek-related discussions going on as well.
Yes, indeed. So thank you for listening. And this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much for being with us. And we look forward to your company next time. Until then, Eamon in England also signing off.